So it's a pleasure today to have Miriam Weilemann here with us. So Miriam did her PhD in York with Roger Kolbeck, and now she's a postdoc in Vienna, at ICOGI Vienna, with Miguel Navasquez. And well, she will talk today about quantum preparation games. Miriam, the stage is yours.
Okay, thanks, Flaminia. Thanks for having me first. I'll present some work on quantum preparation games, which is a joint work with Edgar Aguilar and Miguel Navasquez, who are also here at ICOGI, and you probably know. I guess I'll dive right in. Please let me know if anything, like if you can't hear me or anything, because it's my first Zoom talk, so it could be that there are more technical problems than we've already had. So let me start with the motivation. So the question we wanted to ask is how can we most efficiently certify that we have certain quantum resources? So we may have a resource theory and we want to actually be sure that we have the that we can really produce the resources we think we can produce. Okay, and so the question is how to best do this, and there is quite a few of results on this that we know. So we know about kind of how this behaves in the asymptotic limit. So from rates for this. So if we have a state, which we call the rho, and we want to certify that we have this state, and not another state. Sorry?
There is a problem with your audio.
Oh no. Can you hear me at all, or what is the problem?
It's squeaking sometimes.
What I was trying to say, okay, so we might be in a situation where we have a state rho that we want to search, that we want to certify as, sorry, I've lost track a bit. We want to certify that we have a resource state rho, but there might be an alternative and we might also have sigma. And then we know from theorems like Stein's lemma and generalizations that in fact the error that we do for mistaking this state decreases exponentially with the round numbers. So if we have many copies of the state, it's less likely, and it's related to the relative entropy. So there are generalizations of this as well, where you, for instance, want to distinguish rho from a set of states that sigma is in, and other things. So we know a lot about rates, but now what we wanted to ask, is what happens if we have a certain particular finite n. So let's say we have 30 copies of our state, and we want to certify that we have the state rho. So what is the best thing we could do? So what measurement should we perform to do that? And also, is it possible, for instance, instead of collectively measure those states, measure each subsystem separately? Can we still do what we want? And what is the best way to do this? So this is the type of question we want to ask. Okay? And so for this, we have introduced what we call quantum preparation games, and I want to explain what these are now. Okay, so the very basic idea is that there is a player and a referee who play n rounds of a game. And the game is the player prepares some states and he sends them to the referee. Okay, now the player has some strategies, and usually we assume that there is a set of states he can prepare and nothing outside. Then what the referee does is he receives a state. He can measure it, so he has several measuring devices here, and he has a classical memory. So he can write down, for instance, inputs and outputs to his measurement devices. And then at the end of the game, after whatever rounds and rounds we play, he can score the player. Okay, so he would assign a score to a particular player that should somehow capture whether the player is good at preparing the resource we are interested in. Okay, and the expected score for the player would then be, so there is a final configuration of the memory that the referee obtains. And to each configuration, he would assign a score. And the average score or the expected score is then the score he assigns to these configurations times the probability that the player can actually achieve this. Yes, and so this is what we would be interested in if we want to quantify those resources. Okay, now this is the very basic idea. Now a bit more detail. So what we particularly care about are what we call Maxwell-Lehman games. So we have one of those N-round games, and I now want to say a bit more about what the referee looks like in this case. So the referee in each round obtains a state from the player, and he does a measurement, but this is called the Maxwell-Lehman game because all the information about what he does is stored in this memory tape S. So all inputs and outputs are sent to the next round or kept for the next round, where he makes his decisions on what to measure based on everything. And so we can think of this like an omniscient demon who is there to advise him what to do next, essentially. Okay, now the interaction with the player, how this works is, for one thing, he obtains states from the player, but he also leaks any information he keeps. So essentially the player can wiretap his lab and know all the classical information he stores and also what measurement he's gonna perform. So the player really has a lot of information. Also, let's say he wants just to make him believe that he can prefer the resource he's supposed to. He has kind of a lot of information about how the protocol is gonna go that he can use each round to improve the state he sends to the referee. Okay, so this is the setting. Then there is one technical assumption we have to make, and that is that the set of states that the player uses is closed under post-selection with the measurements of the referee. What this means is that, if you think about, we want the referee to be able to kind of quantify how well the player can prepare the resource we're interested in. Now, if somehow by measuring the referee himself would introduce this resource into the whole scenario, maybe for next round or so, then he wouldn't be really assessing the player, but he would be more like measuring also what he does, and this we don't want. And so this is the motivation of why to consider this assumption that in fact it shouldn't be possible. And okay, an example is, for instance, if the set of player can use his separable states, then the referee can just do normal measurements and he won't introduce entanglement in later rounds or so. So this is also often met when we look at particular examples. Okay, and then in this Maxwell-Lehman game, what is kind of nice is there is also a simple way to compute the score. So we can do this recursively. So if we say we have a player that can produce states from this set C, then did someone say something? Okay, never mind.
Yeah, Miriam, sorry. So there is still a problem with the...
Okay, so I was talking about how to compute the score of a strategy in such a Maxwell-Lehman game. And the nice thing actually about this is that this can be done in a recursive way. So because the player can actually always adjust his strategy depending on what has happened before, we can think of kind of each round as an optimization for him over all the states he could produce, and this can also depend actually on the configuration. And so, okay, the score we've seen before just somehow breaks out in this recursive way that I've written, and there is an optimization over this player states, and then we kind of can compute his optimal value. The nice thing here is that these are all these functions are linear in the measurement operator. which we will use if we want to optimize later. Okay, I hope I haven't forgotten anything. How could we do this? Okay, I hope you can hear me. It says my internet is not stable, but I'll just talk anyway. So now the task we want to look at first to illustrate this is how to quantify the entanglement of some family of states, which is given here, within n rounds, and n will be 40 in this case. Okay, so what we want to do is we want to quantify entanglement, so we want to assign a value that is very small for any separable strategies, a score that is very small for separable strategies, and should be bigger for this family of states if they are entangled, so for many of the values. Okay, now to make up a preparation game, we need to say how we score the players, we need to say how we keep the memory, and most importantly, we need to find out good measurements that we can perform. So in this particular case, we want to have a witness where on separable states, we get low values, but on these, especially the more entangled states, we get high values. Okay, and so how could we do this? So we assume that the referee here is made up of Alice and Bob, who get this entangled pair of entangled states, and they can perform, each can perform local measurements, and they can communicate with each other. Okay, so then a way to do this is we say that Alice starts and she measures. So in order for the separable states not to do too well, we probably can't just pick one basis to project on, but we maybe take two, and the most natural is the 0, 1 and the plus minus basis. So she just measures with probability 1/2 in the first one and with probability 1/2 in the second. Okay, and then what does this mean? So if she did the first measurement, the state of Bob will be in this line of the block sphere. If he did the second measurement, I've written this out here, the state will be cosine 0 plus sine 1 or with a minus sign here, which means that somehow they're in a tilted line. Okay, and so what do you then want to do if you want a maximal overlap with your witness for these states? Well, the most natural is to take a reflection operator around the theta axis, because then this is an eigenstate. Okay, and so we can construct a witness like that. So it's here what I said with 1/2, 0, 1, and then a z measurement, and here a plus minus measurement, and then the corresponding, this is a corresponding rotation matrix. Okay, so this may be natural because now we have an eigenvector for this to eigenvalue 1. So each theta here matches up with an operator. So this is a family of witnesses. Now this would be great if we knew the angle already, because we could just measure, but now we don't. So what do we do? We take this inspiration from gradient descent and actually compute the derivative, which is another operator. And this can be used to update the angle. Okay, so we have two POVMs that we can measure. Sometimes the one that estimates this witness, sometimes the one for this. And this will allow us to, in the end, get an angle as well as an estimation for this witness. So the way we're going to score this is after n rounds is because we want to actually quantify the entanglement, we'll take a binary entropy of the angle we find, and then some, this is a Heaviside function, where we discard kind of some threshold because we want separable states to get a very low score essentially. Okay, so we only take like good values of this, good counts of this, so to say. Okay, but this is only like an intuition of, I mean, this is not clear to work yet. This is just an intuition of how one could think about coming up with such games. Okay, so now what really happens during the game? So we want to quantify the entanglement of players. So some prepare that prepare the state for some theta and copies of it. And we compare this to different other plays. We'll see what these are later. Now, what would the referee do in reality? So he would start at around zero here, and he would do one of the measurements. So probably at the beginning, he does more the gradient measurement, and later he does more the witness measurement, because first you want to adapt, and then later you'll want to estimate the witness. So it could be a sigmoid function, for instance, that decides which one to choose. Okay. Okay, then next step, depending on his outcome, he updates his memory state. So his memory state is either, so there it's a vector with two entries, one counting the outcomes for zero and one counting the outcome for one. And he just adds his outcome to this. So it starts at zero, zero, and then it goes plus minus one. Okay. And then as next step, he updates the angle. So this measuring of the gradient tells him how to update his angle for the next round. Okay, and then he goes to the next round, or if it's the last round, he computes the score of the final configuration. So he has a final angle that he ended up with and a final count of how many times he measured plus one. Okay. Now, what happens if we actually play this? And this is what happens. So if the player really prepares this state and we start with an angle theta equal to zero and follow this game, we really find a score that pretty nicely matches what we think about the entanglement of these states. So the peak is at pi quarter, and at the edges where the state is not entangled, the score is very low. If we compare this to other players, so here we took players that have can prepare any state with a certain restricted negativity. We can see that the score they can achieve with their best strategy increases with the negativity. So somewhere here at the end, it's better than what we can do with these states because we also have a larger set of strategies, and 0.07 here is the separable value. Okay, so this is an example of a preparation game. And kind of a heuristic how one could come up with one. Okay, now maybe more more generally, what can we do with these games? The probably most obvious application is to use them for entanglement detection. Okay, for entanglement certification, which is also kind of how I motivated it. Okay, so now we want to certify the entanglement of a family of states, again, in n rounds. So we have some family of states, and we know that if we have an honest player, he will prepare n copies of one of those states. On the other hand, we may have an adversary or another player who can only prepare separable states. And now we want to be able to actually certify that the states we obtain are entangled against such an adversary. Okay, so what is the scoring here? So in principle, it's a yes-no question. Either we certify it's entangled or we can't certify it. So the final outcomes in the last round will be either entangled or separable. And if we obtain entangled, we think we have certified the entanglement, we will assign a score one. And if we get separable, we will assign a score zero because it's failed. Okay, and then the quality of these tests are given by the errors we make. So we don't want to have errors. So a type one error in this case would be that we have a separable state, a strategy made from separable states, but we guess that it's entangled. And there's a probability for this, and we take the worst case error here. On the other hand, what we also don't want to happen, but which is maybe a bit less bad, is if we have really an entangled state But we are unable to certify that it is, so we say it's separable. Okay, so this is actually what makes a test good or bad in that sense. And this is, so we want to have this in our preparation game as something we can judge. So this is what will tell us if the game we designed is good or not. Okay, and then what we want to do with this is actually to compare different types of measurements. So we can see
the referee in each round can do a global measurement, so he can just take each copy of the state and measure whatever he wants. Or we can say, actually there is not one referee, but he's made up of Alice and Bob, and they can communicate. So there are different ways this can happen. So this adaptive case, we mean that so Alice measures first and then she can communicate her input and outcomes to Bob, and then he can measure using this information. Okay, or we can say we have a fixed measurement, so the two cannot communicate. So they just get kind of the classical state from the last round, and based on this they can both do something and add this to the register, and then it will be sent on, but without communicating. And for these now, we'll want to find the best protocols for different scenarios. Okay, so we optimize over those games. Now, preparation games, and maybe it's not completely obvious because the errors we've seen actually come from optimization over states. And now we want to do optimizations over measurements. So somehow there is a bit too much to optimize. But I can briefly show how this works. So what we want to solve is we say, okay, the score that I can reach, for instance, with a, let's say these are separable states in this case, and with a separable state should be upper bounded by E1, which fits with the definition we gave before if the score is as on the last slide. At the same time, 1 minus the score I can get with an entangled state is upper bounded by E2, and then we can have an objective that essentially is some linear function of E1 and E2. So here, because often this is worse, actually, we fix E1 to be a small value and then minimize it. Okay, now how do we optimize this? So the set here is usually discrete, so this can just be done or has a discrete number of extremal points. So this can just be done with various constraints. For this, what we do is we kind of, instead of doing an optimization over the states, so a maximization over the states, we can transform this into an optimization over the measurements, which looks like that. So maybe I can say, okay, so what one would do is one would kind of take this term to the other side and then take E1 times the identity into the trace. And then it's like an inner product of an operator and a measurement. And then this we can use the dual comb and this will come out. Okay. But now the point is now this is an optimization just over the measurements. And so this we know how to do because we can use an ansatz for this. So for instance, if this is if C was the set of separable states, there is a dual to the DPS hierarchy that we can use to find an approximation to these are then essentially entanglement witnesses, for which we can find a hierarchy of more complicated ansatzes that will converge. Or in other cases, so we can have high dimensional entanglement, there is a different set C and we can again figure out this cone and again find an ansatz. So this is the very basic idea of how this will work. Okay, maybe it's easier with an example. So let's say we just do one round and we want to certify the entanglement of this state. So the state here is plugged in. The scoring rule, we've also already decided, this is a bit far,
So this is just one for entangled. So we just have one POVM element that matters here. And so what we will get if we do that is an optimization just over one element of this thing. Okay, now it's also a two-qubit state, which means that of this hierarchy from before, we only need the first level. So this just means that this can be written as a sum of two operators. And this is actually a very simple optimization over some 4x4 matrix. Okay, now what do we do to compare the different measurements? So we had these three classes before. The global measurements are just any POVMs. So there is nothing to add here. Then there were the adaptive measurements, where now I chose the these to be Pauli measurements. So these would be Pauli measurements, and they're indexed by inputs and outputs here. And there is some distribution with which you would choose the inputs. Okay, so we can imagine there is Alice and Bob. Alice chooses an input, gets an output, sends this both to Bob. He chooses an input, gets an output. So what this means is that, in fact, Alice's input shouldn't depend on her output or Bob's output. At the same time, Bob's input can depend on Alice's output, but not on his own. Okay, so there should not be a B here. So it's like no signaling to things that happened earlier. And the other version with the fixed measurements, there we say that, okay, Alice and Bob have to choose their inputs before knowing any of the outputs. So this is how this distribution is restricted. Okay, and so this is an optimization then, because these are Pauli measurements over these probability distributions. And we can compare them. Okay, so we get different error pairs. So we always fix the E1 error and get the E2 error. And we can see this is really the best we can do with a single shot, just one experiment in these cases. Okay, now, we can also look at more than one round, which is essentially the same. It will just look a bit more complicated, but it's kind of very similar optimization. So we do the same thing here, just three copies of it and three rounds. Now of the case. Okay, and what we get is this plot here. So the first curve we've already seen before, this is one round. And then we can see how it actually improves considerably just with having one or two more rounds. Okay, and this is really the best you can do because the hierarchy in this case has already converged. One other thing to point out, because it's a Maxwell-Lehman game where all the information is retained, this scales really badly. So Alice chooses an input and one of three measurements and gets an output means she has six configurations already to send to Bob after the first measurement. And then he generates six in each case, and so the number of variables just scales really badly, which is also why we stopped at three rounds in this case. We will see later that one can also do different architectures here and have kind of restricted memories for the referee. Okay. This is kind of the principle of what we've been doing. So we've looked at several different scenarios and have had some insights. So one of them is that actually for most states, really the different measurement strategies don't make such a big difference. Where for most, I mean, if you randomly sample states, so it's maybe not so surprising, but what it also tells us is that if you have one class of these measurements that is particularly simple, like just fixing them, you might as well, because it's maybe not worth doing anything more complicated. A thing that we found more surprising is that if you have different rounds and you can adapt between them, this actually helps. So what this means is, okay, if I say I have a set of entangled states that has maybe two states, then I would think that I can do that. Because I can do a few measurements first to figure out which of the states I have. And then once I'm quite confident I have one of the two states, if it's two, I can kind of design a witness that is particularly good for that one, and then keep measuring that. So I would think that adapting in this case would help. But it turns out that this is also the case if we have always the same state. So there is not a best witness for the state, and it's just best to always do that procedure. But in fact, it seems to matter to actually adapt between rounds. Not very much, but there is a slight improvement, and probably if you'd have more rounds, it could get even better. Okay, another thing that is maybe worth pointing out is that there are quite a few works on how to certify entanglement with only a few rounds. So they have explicit methods how they can design particular witnesses that usually you can measure in this adaptive setting. Okay, and we found that actually with the framework of preparation games, we can optimize over such protocols. So that would mean that in this case, we would fix the E2 error, which they do, they set it to zero, and then we minimize E1. Okay, and then we can find the best protocol under these circumstances for the states at hand. There is a small difference because we allow a more adversarial player to compare to, but we can also have a different, slightly different condition and really just do the same as they did. So somehow the preparation games framework captures these previous methods as special cases. Okay, so there is one more thing I want to mention. And this is that we can also describe preparation games where maybe we have an honest player who sent us entangled states and wants them to be certified, but he doesn't have complete control. So then his device, every time he sends a state, interacts with some environment. Okay, so this is written here. So this will be a state we get. So we assume there is an environment, rho A, in some state, rho A star. From this environment, every time a state is sent to the player. Okay, so at the same time, the environment evolves and part of its state is sent to the player, essentially. Okay, so this is here the state, and then we have here cross operators that express this, and the state that goes to the player is the reduced state just on his additional system. Okay, now this is kind of the mathematical description is quite a bit more complicated. So all I want to say is there is again some operator you can take the trace with this environment state with to compute the score. So it's quite similar as before, that it's some trace with something that captures measurements, and in this case also these cross operators of the environment. And one can, if the environment starts in a state rho A star, you can actually compute the score you would get. Okay. And what is nice is that we can also optimize over such games. So on a very high level, it's kind of the same principle. So we want to fix E1. So we the errors we can get on, let's say if it's entanglement certification separable states again, with the same recursive formula that we had before. And now the error E2 is just comes from this interaction with the environment. So it's this formula here, except we maybe don't know the state of the environment, but just the way it interacts with our system. And so this is again an optimization. Now to bring this to a form that we can solve, we can in both cases describe the operators we have in here as in a recursive way that allows us to have functions that just act, depend linearly on the measurements, so that in the end we can just do a huge optimization of the measurements. Okay, I don't want to really go into detail how this works, but it does. And I want to more say what would an example look like. So let's say we have a maximal entangled state. We want to each round such a state is produced and interacts for some time with some environment, with a Hamiltonian. Okay, so that's the interaction. And we use an architecture because we have 30 rounds. We can't do a Maxwell Lehmann game, but we say that the number of states is fixed.
Miriam, your audio just totally went off.
Oh no. Can you hear me again? Okay, sorry. Okay, so we have an interaction with an environment. Did this come through already, or should I restart? Okay, Elise.
I think it would be better to if you could just restart the slide, because also before there was a gap.
Ah, okay. Okay. So, okay. So a particular example now is that we want to have a player who wants to produce a maximal entangled state, but has this interaction with the environment that we've seen before. Okay, and we will ask him to send us 30 of the states he was producing. So we play 30 rounds. Now, we know what the interaction looks like, namely it's with this Hamiltonian, and we have some interaction time that we fix. Okay, so we know the interaction with the environment. Now, let's play the game. So we have to fix an architecture again. So the scoring will again be entangled or not. So we can see this here at the end, entangled or separable. And then we now restrict the memory that the referee can hold, because we cannot actually model 30 rounds of exponentially increasing number of states. Okay, so we say it's 3 rounds. And now to each of them, for each configuration, there is a POVM that will be performed. So in this picture, it would be a 4 outcome POVM. 3 outcomes that go to future state, and 1 that will make us conclude early and say, ah, it's separable. And so over each of these POVM elements, we can keep essentially the others fixed and just optimize over one of them at a time. And so the idea is to go through this tree one by one and optimize each of the POVM. So with each optimization, we'll get potentially better. We might not reach the optimum. But it turns out that if we actually do that, this works quite well. So this is a plot from 6 outcome POVMs, and there were 8 epochs of optimization. And we see that the error pairs that we find are much better than, for instance, what we've seen before. So we get, just with this CISO optimization, we get relatively good values already. And increasing the number will improve this further. Okay, so I hope I could convince you that this framework is quite useful and can model quite many things. So I'll come to the conclusions. So we've mainly seen applications of this for entanglement detection or quantification. There are many other things one could do. So for instance, one thing we've already looked into is certifying multidimensional entanglement. You could also do multi-party entanglement. Or another thing we would be interested in, but we haven't looked at yet, is the certification of magic states. Okay, in this context, and also what could be useful is removing this assumption that the set of states is closed under this post-selection with the measurements, because you might want to certify magic states with any POVM, for instance. So in other contexts, this might actually make a difference. Another thing we would be interested in is to allow the referee not just to have some classical memory, but maybe have a quantum memory of some fixed dimension. And what we'd hope there is that if we would really understand this, we could maybe use this somehow for modeling NISQ devices. So these are some of the open questions. And with this, I thank you for the attention.
Thank you very much, Miriam. And I'm sorry about these internet problems. And so I'm sure there are questions. Who has questions?
I have a few, I think, small questions. Thank you, Miriam. Great talk. The distinction you made about being able to perform global measurements versus sort of like adaptive poly versus local poly, I'm wondering why those were restricted to the poly basis. Like, I imagine that if you could do general POVMs and not restrict yourself to the poly basis, you might find something different. Is there a motivation? Did I misread you?
Yes, that's true. Okay, so okay, one of the reasons is that if you restrict to some basis here, it can be anything. Poly is just an example that we also saw often used in kind of other places, so we thought this is a natural choice. Then you can just optimize in this case over those probability distributions, and this is very easy to optimize. What you could do is you could say, okay, we want product measurements, for instance. Any product measurements are sold. And then this entangled POVM in the slide will be a product measurement. But then you have to do a seesaw optimization like we did in the end, because then there is not, so you could fix Alice's measurement and optimize Bob's and vice versa, and this works. And I think we did that at some point, and I think it can give better values. But yeah, so this is possible. It's just that we are not sure to achieve the optimal if we do this type of optimization. In this case, we can really say with these measurements, this is the best we can do.
Yeah, I guess I was wondering there, I think maybe the slide before, the slide afterward, you had this sort of splitting where there were sort of six outcomes that had come from Alice's measurement. Yeah, right there. Like whether it's X, Y, Z in the outcomes. Whereas if Alice doesn't choose a basis, if she says does a sick POVM in a tetrahedral configuration, which is just no settings but four outcomes, that gives some kind of compression, because then she only has four outcomes, but it still explores the whole state space.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so you'd say, okay, instead of choosing among three and getting two outcomes each, she would choose one and get four outcomes. I'm a bit worried if she doesn't choose that she could be fooled by someone who then... So the thing about choosing is that with a separable state, you cannot fool her as well, because you cannot predict what she's going to measure. I'm not really sure about the measurement you have in mind, whether this wouldn't happen there. So it's like in the first game with the gradient descent, you really need two different measurements, because otherwise you could always construct a separable state that gets an optimal score as well. But one thing you can definitely do is let her choose among two. So you could do just the XZ plane. And in some cases, you already do as good as you do with that. So yes, it can be reduced.
One other question. You gave this example where you had only one possible state coming in, which was, I think, phi tensor n.
Yes.
So is that like five being a family of states, or are you talking about like the maximally entangled two-qubit state with many copies?
I'm talking about this way we have before, so 0, 0, 1+. So that one for example. So when this you compare to a player with separable state.
So if you can really perform any global measurement, and you don't have to like work in sort of a subalgebra of the equivalent of 2 qubits, can you just project onto that state and then that's the only state that could possibly win the game?
Probably yes. So you're saying you project onto this state, but as in the a global measurement kind of way?
Yeah. So the figure here seems to be excluding that because you're saying adaptiveness helps and that it's not possible to have a perfect score. So I'm wondering, like, what's the restriction here? Why is that measurement not allowed?
Okay, so here I restrict the measurements that, okay, they don't do global measurements, the two parties. So they do the same measurements, but it's not there. Yeah, they don't do that particular measurement. So they do actually measurements from class M3, I think, in this particular case.
That answers that. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Okay. So actually, Miriam, I don't know if I missed that, but what happens when you have more than one than two parties?
So you mean in each round you
yeah.
I haven't missed that because I haven't actually spoken about that. But I guess I mean you could do that. As in, there is nothing that would stop you from sending 3 qubit states each round, and then you could have a similar analysis. So you could have You have more options then, but okay, you could have Annalise, Above, and the Charlie, and then you could have different wiring. So you could have Alice goes first, Bob, then Charlie, or you could say, I mean, you could say some of them can communicate, or you could say, well, there are different scenarios you could also consider. I guess then this would be interesting, for instance, if you want to certify multipartite entanglement. So if you have a three-partite state, you may want to have three parties here. And if you send copies of that, and this is something we haven't really looked into.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Does anybody else have questions? Well, if not, I think we should thank Miriam again.